So, who hasn't marveled at a peacock feather? It's kind of psychedelic here. And all the incredible colors that are in the peacock feather. And it's interesting how they produce those colors is the peacock can eat poisonous plants and produce the plumage that they have. And so the peacock is the symbol for the bodhisattva because the bodhisattva does the same thing as the peacock. A bodhisattva devours the poisons in the world and people's delusions and bad karma and produce the plumage of the enlightenment thought and enlightenment itself. And it's really the essence of the bodhisattva practice. The teachers have said that there is no enlightenment without exchanging self and others. It's a real turning point in the practice, shifting from our own self-cherishing usual habits, way of being, and changing that into pure altruism, really. What it is. This practice of taking and giving is a very important practice, and sometimes it's a little bit misunderstood. And it's said that there was a time when it was actually held secret because of the possibility of misunderstanding happening. So I think it's important to understand this practice, and it's important to do it. Do it with understanding. There's different ways of doing exchanging self for others. In the simplest terms, you visualize your mother and you see her suffering, and because you've developed compassion previously to this, you want to relieve her suffering, and so you aspire to take it on. You visualize that it actually leaves her and comes to you. That's the taking part of the practice. Now, one might think, well, why would I want to take more suffering on? I've got enough of my own, thank you. But there is a paradox with this practice. It's a very amazing practice because the practice has the ability to remove the suffering from the sentient beings. But the suffering never arrives to the bodhisattva. It never actually arrives, and there's no harm or no suffering at all that's felt by doing this practice. And in fact, it's such a highly meritorious practice that the merit of the practitioner of the bodhisattva is immense. But there's never any suffering or harm that's actually felt or taken on. Even though the desire to take it away and the willingness to feel it is there, it never actually arrives. And when a practitioner does this practice enough and gets very accomplished at it, one can actually take away other people's suffering. And this is even before one, attains full enlightenment. So it's a highly praised bodhisattva practice. So that's the taking part. And then the giving part, the bodhisattva has accumulated this massive merit by doing the taking part of the practice. Then the bodhisattva turns around and sends out all that merit and any other possessions of any kind on any level in order to make the sentient being, in this case, your mother, happy. So we're taking away suffering, which is compassion, and we're giving happiness, which is loving kindness. And those two practices are the roots of the enlightenment thought, which is the aspirations and actions to attain enlightenment for the sake of all beings. And according to the teachers, that's the only way to get enlightened. There is no other way. This practice can be tied with visualizations. For example, you can visualize black smoke coming in the suffering of your mother, the negative karma, and so on, and going into your nose and down into your heart and destroying your self-cherishing attitude, which is the cause of all of our problems, is our ego. And that being purified then creates massive merit. And then that merit is then sent out in the form of white light through, with your breath. You breathe in and you breathe out. So the practice is linked to the breath, or can be. However, my teachers have said that the breathing practice is actually a didactic tool to train the mind to be in the compassionate and loving kindness states. And eventually, you don't need to do the breathing part of it anymore. You just develop those states of mind. These are mind practices. And that is really what we're aiming for here. And so your complete existence becomes transformed eventually into altruism, into humility, and into giving. And practitioners who continue to develop this practice, as I said before, can actually take away people's suffering. So it's a very high practice if it's done correctly. And it's a very beautiful practice, which is the really the heart of the Bodhisattva path, making peacock plumes.
It doesn't seem like animals have any bad things to take on. They're just so pure in a way. But of course, we say all sentient beings. How does it work with animals?
Well, they have a lousy rebirth. And you can say what you want about pink poodles in Beverly Hills by the pool, but animals are by nature ignorant when it comes to Dharma. They're not able to hear the Dharma. They're not able to practice Dharma. And it's besides all the suffering, you know, all jokes aside, in general, animals have tremendous suffering on all kinds of ways. But the biggest problem with the animal rebirth is ignorance and the inability to practice Dharma. So that's something that we take away, is their bad rebirth, and we send them the merit to have a higher rebirth so they can practice. That's one
Yes.
way to look at it.
Yes.
These practices can be done different ways.
Is there a better time to do this for people, like when they're ill or when they're in their dying time or any time?
The best time to do it is right now. And the reason is you don't know that you're going to be alive an hour from now.
Right.
And so the best practice that you can do is the practice that you will do. And the best time to do that practice is now. And it's not being, you know, smarty about it. It's just simply the reality, the facts of the situation, which is we have a precious human rebirth, but the clock is ticking, and it's ticking faster than we usually want to admit to ourselves. And any postponement of practicing that we do is a mistake. Any moment of practice, now is the moment of practice. So if somebody's dying, fine. If they're not dying, fine. They're still suffering. They're still in samsara. We're doing this for sentient beings who are in samsara. That's the definition of the practice.
And how does it benefit the practitioner?
Oh, you accumulate massive merit and you develop your enlightenment thought, which is what you need to do to become enlightened. Enlightenment thought has to be strong. If it's not strong, you won't do the work that's required, because becoming enlightenment is a big deal, and it takes a lot of effort and work. It takes joyous enthusiasm. And so those practices that are going to need to be done, you have to have the energy, the motivation, the oomph to do them. Now, when you do a practice like this, it generates a lot of merit. That then leads to success. in your practice, in the sense that it strengthens your practice and you become more firmer in your faith and your belief, your aspirations, and your desire to liberate all sentient beings who have been your mothers from the suffering of samsara. And that becomes your sole motivation. And that's what lends purpose and meaning to your precious human rebirth. And so you're not wasting it, and you can die with a peaceful mind that you didn't waste your precious human rebirth. There's no higher practice really than enlightenment thought practice. And there's probably no greater merit you can generate either. It's a supreme practice. Books and texts have been written about it, praising it, entire discourses. Enlightenment thought is the turning point in your practice from being just a regular person into being a bodhisattva.
And it's called exchanging self for others. So there's a reduction of self in this equation.
Well, in reality, there is no self. But we have the delusion that there is, and we hold on to it tightly, usually around right here. So when we bring in the suffering of our mother, it goes in and it destroys that illusion. That's how you destroy it, is by stop being selfish and self-centered. And it turns it into altruism, at which we then give. So our main problem is that we're deluded in our belief of the self. And this is a practice to remedy that. It's an antidote to that sickness, which is the sickness of ignorance, which is the main sickness. It's the main delusion, is ignorance. And the delusion of the self is one of the main ignorances. It's not the only one, but it's one of the big ones.
Would you like to say anything more on this topic?
Well, just one closing personal note. About 3 or 4 years ago, I started having some chronic pain, which was sometimes very severe. And there were many days when you reach your limit on your painkillers, you can't take anymore. And so I looked up different Dharma texts, what the advice was in those situations. And inevitably, the advice was the practice of exchanging self for others. So even though I had done it before, I started doing it a lot more because there were many times when I didn't have any other choice, really, sort of. But I was amazed how much it actually helped my pain level. And it was kind of an eye-opener, actually, for me to have that experience. Because one would think, if you're in extreme pain, the last thing you want to do is take on somebody else's pain, right? Like, I'm already at a 10. You want me to go to 150 or what? So it's counterintuitive in that sense. That's why this practice and practices like this must be practiced. You can't get it just by reading a book. Because if you just read a book, you'll go, well, that's the opposite. That doesn't make any sense. I'm not doing that. And you won't have the experience of it. So I was sort of forced into the experience of it, but it really made me a believer, so to speak. Not that I was a disbeliever, but when you have a personal experience of something, it's very difficult for somebody to take that away from you because you lived it. It's your lived experience. So it gave me a much greater appreciation for the practice of taking and giving. And it also led me to study it more and to learn more about it and to understand it better, which is something that teachers always encourage people to learn as much about this practice as you can, and then do it well. So yeah, that's all.
Thank you so much for sharing this with us. Nakpala.
Okay. Have a good one.
Dedicate the merit.